Doogie, Sam.
The spotlight is back on Real Madrid and Xabi Alonso. His position as manager is said to be in danger. So let's do what we do best. Talk about what's gone wrong and then start pointing fingers.
He simply is not right for the job. He's lost the dressing room. He's lost the trust of the players. The players do not believe in him. You can't sack 11 players, but you can sack one manager.
Xabi Alonso has a little bit more wiggle room, a little bit more time at Real Madrid so that he can continue to do what he has to do at this football club to get us back on top.
I can tell you that the board feels that there is not enough harmony between the players and the manager and that he hasn't found the formula for Real Madrid to become a regular winning side. They're not feeling comfortable with Xabi Alonso, and that is, in my eyes, the beginning of the end.
Yes, hello everybody and welcome to another episode of The Truth. I am your host, Sam Tai. Joining me is a presumably jubilant Doogie Critchley. How are you, the Doogs?
How are you, the Doogs, indeed. Yeah, I actually feel just a sense of a relief, really, because all week last week I felt very confident, and I'd said online.
You were really confident.
I said on a TV show, I said on a podcast. Like, I couldn't afford for it to go wrong, and it really didn't. It wasn't the most thrilling game. I'm sure no neutrals really enjoyed it that much, but I thought we deserved it. I managed to get a ticket in the end, so I was in the stands.
Lovely.
And Newcastle were just so flat. This high pressing, this high energy side, didn't see any of that. I know we'd talked about them playing in midweek, but Sunderland were very, very comfortable. I've always been a big Nick Voldemada fan, and I love him even more after Sunday. But a great weekend for the whole of the truth, really.
Yes, yes. You say the neutrals didn't enjoy it, but I know one neutral who loved it, and we'll bring in our producer here, the man who pulls the strings, West London's finest Pablo Aymar impersonator. You're getting nice ones because it's Christmas. It's Jack Collins. Jack, you enjoyed the derby.
I did enjoy the derby, but not as much as I enjoyed that as an intro. I've got to say, that's very special. Thank you, Sam.
You're back to Sauron in the new year.
Yeah, I mean, you know, do your thing. But yeah, I did enjoy the derby because it was kind of, you know, Newcastle were worse than I was expecting them to be. I don't think anyone was expecting them to be quite that bad. But I genuinely did kind of look at it and think, this is the kind of blood and thunder I was expecting from the derby, that, you know, the crunching challenges, the madness of it, and the kind of ridiculousness of the own goal. I was watching this with my brother, and the goal went in and both of us just burst out laughing.
It was hilarious.
One of the funniest. It was like, we were genuinely dissecting it for about 5 minutes, and I was like, has he just forgotten they've switched ends? Like that's the best part. And obviously that's not true.
No.
But it's still the best possible explanation for what Nick Voldemada did that I can come up with. So, yeah, I mean, it was a lot of fun. And as Doogie says, a good weekend for the whole gang here on The Truth.
Yes, I think so. I'll get to those other results in a moment. Just before we begin, I played my opposites game for my football team this week. So,
and you're saying a stint in goal.
Final game of the year, we all changed to the opposite positions that we play. So all the strikers were in defence, all the defenders were up front, except for on one team, the two goalkeepers were playing up front as a strike partnership.
Nice.
And I played in goal.
Are you normally a striker?
No, right. I play a lot of different positions at once. I'm like the Boubacar Camara of the team. So the only position I technically don't play is in goal. So I put the gloves on and I enjoyed myself.
Are you a bit nervous?
No, because I told the defenders immediately before kickoff, I'm going to play like a crazed Jordan Pickford. So I had them, everybody was
more
kind of aware of what was going
to
happen.
Post,
so,
yeah.
But I kept a clean sheet. To be fair, the strikers that were playing in defence did a good job of protecting me somehow.
Yeah.
But I made a save that went straight into the groin and literally knocked me backwards. The ball rolled back to the striker. He went for the follow-up. And as I was rolling backwards in pain, my legs flipped up.
No.
And I kicked the ball over the bar.
Really?
Backwards over the bar for a
like
corner.
A kind of Rene Higuita.
So. As like a follow-up save. It was absolutely insane. Obviously, I didn't mean to do it. Don't tell everyone I know
no.
that. Don't tell anyone that. Of course I meant to do it.
But is there any video evidence of this save?
No, unfortunately not.
On multiple levels, I want to see it. You being hit in the groin sounds entertaining. You doing this kind of accidental kick.
Yeah.
It sounds brilliant.
It was a hell of a save, trust me. Right, let's talk about the other results. Villa won again.
Yes.
And did you know that we are now absolutely huge? We are officially big time.
Yeah, it did confirm it last week because you've been saying it for a number of weeks.
Oh, no,
as well.
I meant the podcast.
Yeah, this is cool.
Yeah, we made a TikTok edit.
Well, you specifically did.
Well, yes.
I was briefly in it.
You are you are dragged in down by me, yeah. right? Into the mire, right? We exist as a three. We're all as bad as each other. No, I think it was fine. The clips were from a video that was effectively, it was showcasing Villa's transformation through the season. And it had a load of clips at the start, which were like people doubting Villa, of which there were a couple in there from me. I like to see
Jim White also in there, the likes of
that. Yeah. I like to think that they were doing good scene setting and using my comments. I thought there was one potentially nasty one in there where I did say that Emi Buendia is not the answer. And then there was like a slow-mo of Emi Buendia scoring against Arsenal. but I stand by it. He's not the answer. If he was, Unai Emery might start him once. So there you go. But hey, that means we're huge.
Still having a go then.
That means we're huge.
You are massive. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the podcast, yeah, it was cool to see it. And yeah, it was amongst some esteemed journalists, etc., who were way more over the top than you were in your analysis as well. So
I'm looking at the clips back, honestly, it was from the podcast we did in September, which was called What the Hell is Going On at Aston Villa. I looked sheepish, borderline embarrassed. There was no malice to what I was saying. No. There was no joy being taken. It was me just kind of going, well, we're not very good.
But there we go. Things have changed.
And to follow up as well, Fulham beat Burnley. Mm. And we were reliably informed that Fulham never win at Burnley or something like that. So I was surprised.
71 years. It's been 71 years.
Oh my God, Titanic match.
Yeah, it was fun-ish. Like, we made it really hard work for ourselves, but, you know, with Harry Wilson Ballon d'Or candidate in his prime at the moment, I don't really know if there's much else you can say, really.
You joke, but him and Dominic Calvert-Lewin being probably the two form players in the Premier League, along with Phil Foden. What a turnaround! It's ridiculous.
It's the big three. As they call it. The first goal that Fulham scored was just really funny. Like, really funny. That what Hartman did there at the near post, that's what most amateurs do in, like,
did you see that last
poor
night?
Lighting.
Monday night football, yeah.
Yeah, it was just insane. Anyway, right, let's move on to the big topic.
Yes.
The big, big topic. It's Real Madrid again.
Yeah, we have already discussed them this season, talking about Xabi Alonso's start, but it does feel like a good time to kind of do an update, because going into the game at the weekend against Alaves, there was a lot of speculation that if that didn't go his way, and we don't really know how true that speculation was, let's say, but there was a lot of speculation that he could well lose his job.
It was Marca reporting, even the midweek before, that if they lost to Manchester City, it could happen, yeah. Let alone what happened at Alaves.
It was pretty dicey, because they beat Alaves 2-1, Mbappe and Rodrigo scored. Rodrigo, we'll talk about, and Mbappe throughout this episode, but Rodrigo had been in terrible form up until the last week or so. This was just their third win in their last nine games, going back to the 4th of November and a 1-0 defeat at Anfield. In that time, so in that nine games, they've beaten Olympiacos, Athletic Club, and now Alaves. They've drawn with Rayo Vallecano, Elche, and Girona, and lost to Man City, Celta Vigo, and Liverpool. So this result, the one against Alaves at the weekend, leaves Real Madrid 4 points behind Barcelona. And they've got this home game at the weekend against Sevilla. They also play in the Copa del Rey in midweek. But that game against Sevilla will be their final league game until the 4th of January. So it does feel like a good time to talk about Real Madrid once again. Because the memories almost, and it does feel like almost like a distant memory of them being 5 points clear of Barcelona, having won El Clasico and 10 of their first 11 league games of the season. That was on the 1st of November. Since then, they've only won 2 of 6 league games, and they are now 4 points behind. Barcelona, as is their way under Hansi Flick, have scored far more goals, but the gap in terms of goals conceded is only 20 for Barcelona and 16 for Real Madrid. And whilst Real Madrid are still in a pretty decent position in the Champions League, they still sit seventh, so as it stands, would be guaranteed automatic promotion or progression, let's say, through to the last 16. They have lost 2 of their last 3 against Liverpool and City. And there are 15 sides in the Champions League within 3 points of them. So it's looking pretty dicey in the Champions League for sure. If this current run of form continues, they look like they might well be out of the title race by mid-February. And when we were last discussing them, Sam, we kind of said this Barcelona and Real Madrid both feel flawed. They both feel like sides slightly in transition. But we expected this title race to go right down to the wire. So they need to get it together.
Yeah, and also I remember leaving off thinking that Real Madrid were just very fully capable of beating the other 18 teams in the league, 19 teams in the league, and the recent run of form would suggest otherwise. They've dropped a lot of points. You know, they were quite clear of Barcelona, and now they're 4 points off again, which is the same margin that they were second to Barcelona at the end of last season, 88 points to 84. So why did they make a change in the summer? They wanted to get better. They wanted to close the gap to Barcelona, who they use as their consistent yardstick, and vice versa. And if they're behind Barca, they make changes to try and bridge that gap. Where has it gotten so far? Literally nowhere. They're still 4 points off and they still feel like quite a flawed team, just in a bit of a different way. It's been quite weird to watch. I was just quickly looking something up there to make a crack a joke about Franco Mastantuono, because he played 90 minutes in the 4-0 win over Valencia on the 1st of November and then got pubalgia and missed all of the bad games and has just returned to play 1 minute against Alaves in a 2-1 win. So the short answer is Franco Mastantuono is the key to victory.
Well, you joke, but to be honest, although he didn't necessarily have the numbers to reflect how well he started.
His one goal, yeah.
He did actually start the season really well, and he felt like the kind of symbol of Xabi Alonso's new era in some ways. Obviously not in terms of star names, that'll still be Mbappe, it'll still be Vinicius Jr., etc., in terms of who gets the most attention. But Mastantuono and his energy and his tenacity and his pressing felt like quite a good sort of mood setter in that team.
He was chosen by Alonso for a reason, and it was because of the defensive work rate. And he was chosen instead of some other players, and I think Alonso was trying to send some messages. And I think this will bring us on to probably the most important part of managing Real Madrid, which is to manage the dressing room. Yeah. And it was always going to be a bit of a tall order to bring discipline and tactical discipline from the top down in this dressing room. It's not really the kind of place Real Madrid have ever been before, but it seems like the place they want to move to. How do you think that's gone?
Well, I think the first thing to sort of say, which it almost seems like quite a straightforward point, but Real Madrid, I think in my opinion, in most people's opinion, it's the biggest club in the world, or if not the second biggest club in the world. The attention you get for playing for Real Madrid, the kind of ego that comes with being a star for Real Madrid, it puts you on a different plane to pretty much any footballer on the planet. You arrive there as someone who's no doubt pretty much either excelled at their previous club or looks like they could become a Ballon d'Or winner. And to have Bellingham, Mbappe, Vinicius Jr., even players maybe a little slightly more on the periphery, like Valverde, they're all kind of top 20 footballers in the world. That's a lot of players to put into one functional side. And then you add in a summer of big change in defence. You add in a different style of manager in Xabi Alonso, who, while he garners a lot of respect for his work at Bayer Leverkusen, which went pretty much close to perfect for a manager taking over a club which had a massive inferiority complex, and given how much they were struggling at the time of his takeover, if you employ someone like Xabi Alonso, who does have much more strict positional play ideas and is much more of a team ethic guy, you know, he's worked under Mourinho and Guardiola, and he's got this amazing footballing education. It was going to be a bit of a change from Ancelotti, who was, you know, not necessarily a pushover, but definitely a very, very good man manager, everyone's kind of best friend. So I think there have been quite a few things that have gone wrong, some of which are Alonso induced, but I would put most down to the kind of unfortunate instance. And I think injuries as a whole subsection we'll come on to. But I think the big issue for this side is it's become probably even more so than Man City with Erling Haaland, the most one-man team, effectively, in terms of attacking numbers in the entirety of Europe, it feels like, at the moment. I mean, Kylian Mbappe, 26 goals in 22 games. That's 17-17 in La Liga. That's 9-5 in the Champions League. He was missing, of course, for that game against Man City. That is the best start by a Real Madrid player in the Champions League in terms of goals in their first five games since Ronaldo in 2014-15. They've scored 47 goals in all competitions. He scored 55% of them. So for a little bit of context, Ronaldo in his best ever goal scoring season at Real Madrid, which was 61 in 14-15, that was 38% of their total. And of course he had Benzema, he had Bale, etc. But there's been really poor attacking returns from the rest of this attack. And whilst last year, probably around this time, we did a podcast saying, how is Kylian Mbappe adapting to Real Madrid? How is he liking this number nine role?
I mean, I remember saying that he was trying too hard. And I think he was. And he really has relaxed into this role of, I score all the goals for Real Madrid now. He looks amazing.
He really does. He really does. And you do need other players to step up, because Vinicius Jr., he started 14 of 17 league games. He started 5 of 6 Champions League games. So he's been heavily involved. 5 goals, which is a really poor return for a player of his quality. His dribble success rate is the lowest of his career. His expected goals and expected assists per 90, the lowest of the last 3 years. Rodrigo went 32 games without scoring. That was an unwanted club record. No one in the history of Real Madrid had ever gone that long without scoring. So That must be amongst forwards, actually, now
it's
I say
to
that.
Be, because Iker Casillas definitely didn't bag one every 32.
Yeah, I've never seen the caveat for that, but it must be amongst forwards because that is crazy. Or maybe it's after amongst players that have scored a certain amount of goals prior to that as well. So, yeah, there's been a drop-off from other players as well. And then you look at some of the stalwarts of last year, like Fede Valverde having to play a lot of the season at right-back because of injury, Sam. And again, for the second consecutive year, we're kind of coming back to injuries and players moving around and just a bit of a mess.
Yeah, well, injuries. I mean, look, Real Madrid decided to let Jude Bellingham play the Club World Cup, then have surgery and miss the start of La Liga, which will forever baffle me. Like, do they just completely misunderstand how important the two of those things are? They've got it completely wrong.
It's the money, you morons.
They can get there without Jude. Look at the attacking options they've got. I don't get it. I don't. But yeah, Trent, so pretty bad hamstring injury in like game two or something. Or was it?
Did he play three games or something? It was early on.
Yeah, really early on. And now he's done his quad. Mm-hmm. He's out for another 2 months.
Yeah.
Eder Militao is out for months. Carvajal is out.
Militao is massive, isn't it?
It's huge. It's absolutely huge. He's the best centre-back they have. And while Dean Huijsen has been inconsistent, you know, some good, some bad, he's really young and inexperienced. Like, he's got barely anything to his name here. He's like shot onto the scene. Bang. Juventus, Roma, Bournemouth, Real Madrid, all in the space of like 18 months. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you're asking a lot of this guy. And Rudiger is insane. So,
he always has been.
You know, and I think he had a really good season last season. Like, he was brilliant last season, actually. But then he got injured, and now it's been a bit up and down. So, losing Eder Militao is really big here in a very bad way. Yeah, Carvajal's out. You don't see Mendy anymore. You don't really see Alaba anymore. Mbappe missed the Man City defeat. So, even he is not infallible. I've been talking about it for the last few months and you're probably very bored of hearing about it, but it is not a coincidence that all of the teams that went deep into the Club World Cup are really, really struggling with fitness issues, and Real Madrid are right there amongst it, along with PSG and with Chelsea. So this is something they're probably going to have to contend with all season long. And Alonso is trying to make them play an even more intense version of football than they played last year, despite the fact that they're already fatigued from last year. So I think this is going to keep happening. I'm not sure how they can really avoid this. The thing they can avoid is, like, could you stop getting sent off for silly reasons?
Oh, man.
And this does reflect poorly on Alonso's grip on the dressing room, I think, because they've been given 6 red cards this season, albeit 3 in one game against Celta Vigo, which was an almighty meltdown. It's so unbecoming of a team like this. Or is it? Because Real Madrid have often dropped and, you know, complained at referees, and they had Casemiro, they had Sergio Ramos. Like, is this such a foreign concept? But when I see Alvaro Carreras basically talked himself into a red, it's not good enough. It's really not good enough. And like, Alonso can stand there on the sideline as much as he likes, and you know what he seemed to say to Fran Garcia when he got 2 yellow cards in a minute was a bit of a, are you effing kidding me? Probably said the same thing to Carreras. I don't know what he said to Endrick for getting sent off without being on the pitch. Yeah. I don't know what that deserves. He can put his head in his hands all he likes, but like, he doesn't have a handle on this dressing room. And it started all the way back at the beginning with Vinicius Jr. And like it or not, it started with picking Mastantuono over Rodrigo, over Vinny. Like, he set his stall out and he said, no, these are the attributes that I want to focus on. These are the attributes that I want to define my Real Madrid. And it's rubbed people up the wrong way. And it doesn't take a genius to figure out what's happened here, because multiple players and Carlo Ancelotti have all spoken about this and how to manage this Real Madrid dressing room. And I don't think he's doing enough buttering up.
It's difficult, isn't it? I mean, Real Madrid, even in the Ancelotti era, is, of course, phenomenally successful in the Champions League. But I think even the most ardent Real Madrid fan would say they weren't always the best team, even in the final, and they often found a way to win.
Of course.
And so they are trying to build or implement a structure and a philosophy at the club that is much more modern in its working. And you look at the clubs that have succeeded in the Champions League in recent years, whether that's Man City or Liverpool have got to quite a few finals, Inter Milan. What are they? They were great teams. They were really, and maybe Real Madrid even this year with Mbappe in the sort of form he is, maybe they can get to a semi-final and a final, and then you never really know. But what is more likely to be able to lead to consistent year-on-year success is a squad that really pulls in the same direction. And these red cards against Celta Vigo, they left them in a really poor position for the next couple of games. So against Man City, Eder Militao also got injured against Celta Vigo. Their backline against Man City was Valverde, Raul Asensio, who has really struggled since his first 3 months maybe as a Real Madrid player. I mean, what I mean by that is he started quite well and then really dropped off quite quickly. Mm-hmm. Then it was Rudiger and Carreras against Man City. Against Alaves, it was Valverde, Asensio, Rudiger, and Victor Valdepeñas, a 19-year-old making his debut at left back. And they got the result. They got the 3 points against Alaves.
They've literally run out of left backs, though. Like, they have to start turning to players like this.
And they have three. They have Fran Garcia, they have Carreras, they have Fulamendi, and none of them are available. And then you also look at the form of key players. I was massively hot on Arda Güler at the start of the season.
And Camavinga, who they have turned to at that point.
They've done before.
This is their fifth choice left back coming in at this moment. Like, that is worth bearing in mind. But also, I think that some of it is obviously so self.
A decent portion of this is self-afflicted.
Yes,
a really decent portion of it.
Yeah, I think it's a strange one in that regard.
Yeah.
And then you look at the form of key players there. I mean, Arda Güler, 0 goals and 1 assist in his last 10 games. I've seen a lot of Real Madrid fans kind of complaining about. And obviously, you know, there's been changes in the composition of that midfield. He's playing in a kind of flat 4-4-2 at times as well, with Bellingham kind of tucking in and Rodrigo playing on the right-hand side. But Vinicius Jr. hasn't now scored since the 4th of October. He's played 13 games since. He's had 40 shots, I calculated, since he last scored.
Oof.
Mastantuono, as you said, missed 2 games with an inflammation of the pubic bone and has played 1 league minute since. So the players that you'd kind of turn to, aside from Mbappe, to kind of rescue them out of this, what I would say actually on that is Jude Bellingham's assist at the weekend was absolutely phenomenal. So there are reasons not to get too down on this Real Madrid side. And I think we could probably go into next, Sam, whether you actually feel like he will be fired given the kind of paucity of options around him. Because the kind of candidates that are being mentioned, none of them feel very realistic or very exciting.
Just before we go there, one question on the Vinicius Junior situation, which has been bubbling all through the season. And he's clearly not in great form. And I think Vinny is definitely one of those players that needs to be put on the pedestal and needs to feel very loved in order to get the best out of him, which is, it's not a criticism. Like, I think the same is true of Mbappe, for what it's worth. The thing here is that Alonso, right from the start, made it really obvious that Mbappe is his guy, not Vinny, not Jude, not anyone else. It was always Mbappe. And when he was rotating the team early in the season, Vinny was coming in and out, Rodrigo was coming in and out, Mbappe always played. Barely ever rested. Even for, like, there was a game they played against Kaira, I think, and they were like, well, this would be the good time to rest Mbappe. Oh, no. And he scored a hat-trick, right? So he always plays. And Alonso choosing Mbappe, it's not a snub on the others. However, it can be interpreted as such if you are minded to feel that way. And then the contract situation with Vinny has been rumbling on as well. And then you get these reports like, okay, lawyers have been engaged to check the Saudi connections. What the hell that means, I don't know. But it's coming from somewhere. And so it's bubbling away. And my question to you is this, and it's not necessarily Alonso's call, but it is Real Madrid's call. If they've chosen Alonso to modernise their approach and they want to stick with that, do you take the Saudi money for Vinny? Is it a Pep Guardiola, Ronaldinho situation a la 2008?
I think given the fact it's to Saudi and not to a rival, or it doesn't feel like it's going to burn them as much as, you know, he's not joining a Barcelona or a Man City, etc. So sides you're going to come up against in the Champions League.
He could join them 2 years later.
Sure. But I think it really depends on the fee as well.
Vinicius Jr. It's a huge fee.
Yeah. Offer could also be matched. If, like, they accept, let's say, you know, £150 million bid from Saudi Arabia, and then PSG just go, yeah, all right. Like, and Vinicius goes, I want to go to PSG.
Well, he can say, Real Madrid are allowed to say
no. Like, I'm not saying that would happen. I'm just like, theoretically, like if you accept a bid for someone and then someone else picks the same bid and then the player goes, well, I'd like to go there, please.
Madrid can still reject that.
They can, but it starts to look a little bit iffy,
sure.
I think. Sure. Look, just on that, I don't know if you know how much you watched the game against Alaves at the weekend. I thought it was really notable that when the front three played together, it was Vinicius through the middle. And it was Mbappe coming off the left-hand side. And look, it moved around,
it
obviously.
Moves, yeah.
It was fluid. But I think it was striking how much Vinicius came through the middle of the park, and then he comes off at the end and he gives Xabi Alonso a big old hug. Mm. And I was like, okay, we've got some progress from where we were a couple of weeks ago. And look, I don't think Vinicius was all in the wrong about that, I think he handled the situation badly, but I can understand where the frustrations are in terms of a contract and all of those elements that, you know, are in the equation. But it does feel like there has been a bit of a healing process between Vinicius Jr. and Xabi Alonso at the very least.
Yes, and I will say this as well. They may have lost to Manchester City, but that did not look like a team throwing the towel in on their manager. Like, they fought every second of that game. They pressed and they harried. They thought they'd won a penalty in the first couple of minutes, and Vinicius was like fist pumping while lying on the floor, having just been fouled. Like, yes, like, this is it. We're going to go up nice and early, and we're going to set the tone here. And this was without Mbappe as well, which really just seemed to embolden the team to be like, no, we can do this. They obviously lost in the end, and they did have quite a lot of players missing. It was a tough situation to be in. But I was looking at that game and I was reading the reports, you know, Marca reporting, Xabi Alonso's neck could be on the chopping block here if they lose. I'm like, this team does not look like they've given up on this manager. Well, so there are certainly times when they play and they play properly.
And Jude Bellingham came out afterwards and he said just that. He said, I personally have a great relationship with him. A lot of the lads do as well. He said, no one is downing tools. No one's complaining. No one's moaning, thinking that the season is over. Like, it wouldn't make any logical sense. I mean, sure, some players won't. They'll never be pleased. They're Real Madrid players. They think they are the best in the world. That's got them in the position they are. They're not going to be happy sitting on the bench. They're not going to be happy being rotated. But you know, with the amount of games as we've discussed throughout the last 2 years, you know, everyone, including Mo Salah, you know, you need to take occasionally sitting on the bench or being rotated a little bit. And if it is coming down to Mbappe or Vinicius Jr., given the way that Mbappe has played this season, I don't think you can sign a better nine than Kylian Mbappe right now. And I don't think you could probably sign a better left winger than Kylian Mbappe if you wanted to use him there. At the moment, on the basis of this season, you can probably find a Vinicius Jr. output level from this season, 5 goals in all competitions. I'm not saying that couldn't improve, and he is probably a 20 goal season player, but could you find someone that fits Xabi Alonso's system better, that feels more motivated by Real Madrid right now? Like, Vinicius Jr. pretty much had the close to the perfect season, didn't win the Ballon d'Or, and his form has never quite got back to the same level, which does feel almost ridiculous to say, but Brazilians really, really care about the Ballon d'Or. It was a big deal for him.
Well, also his whole club made it a circus.
Yeah, I don't think that actually helped, because it kind of fed into this narrative of he was really wronged, and it's kind of led to this strop ever since. And also, if you really believe that your player should have won the Ballon d'Or, you've kind of got to reward him with that contract that reflects it as well. And he'll want parity with Mbappe, want parity with any player in the world. So, yeah, I think it was a real blot on Real Madrid's recent copybook. Also, especially given the fact that Rodri, a fellow Spaniard, won it that year. It just was such a bad look.
Fellow Spaniard. Oh, from Real Madrid. Yeah. Okay, you moved us on to, you know, what else is there?
Yes.
If you're not ready. So for the record,
are you hot on the options?
For the record, I hate all the options. Yeah. Right, unless the option is, have you still got Zinedine's number? Because usually in this
I'm not that hot.
Usually this situation, they ring Zinedine Zidane.
Yeah.
And he picks up the phone and says, yes, I will come and save you. So if he's up for doing that a third time, great. If that fails, usually they ring Carlo Ancelotti. Unfortunately, they sacked him in the summer. So that's probably not an option either. And beyond that, it doesn't look like there's many options here. No. Like, because we all know by now, the personality required to manage Real Madrid is a very special one. It's a borderline unique one. And it's not like they can take their pick from 15 different coaches. And it's not as if being outstanding as a tactical manager is enough to get you the job anyway, or make you a success at the job, because there are other elements to it. So Jurgen Klopp doesn't sound like he wants to come back to management. Antonio Conte would probably set the stadium on fire in a rage at what's been happening recently. Alvaro Arbeloa is not the answer.
I saw this as
the
favourite.
Please stop talking about this.
He's had 16 games in charge of Castilla. Why on earth would you think he would do a better job than Xabi Alonso, who went an entire league and cup season unbeaten? It just wouldn't make any sense to me.
You're dicing with death there, Sam. Watch when Arbeloa comes in and wins 17 games on the trot, and you're going to be on a Real Madrid one instead of an Aston Villa one when it comes to the top of the podcast.
Oh, that would mean we're a super big pod. I do this on purpose. I layer in loads of mistakes so that we make all the super cuts.
So a serious question on this, and like, I think it kind of goes into where this discussion probably is aiming anyway, but So you bring in Xabi Alonso to kind of, as you say, revolutionise the culture a little bit, because I think that last year, Real Madrid, at the end of a Carlo Ancelotti tenure, and look, I think that the overarching narrative that Carlo Ancelotti as a manager who didn't have a structure or a system is overplayed.
Mm-hmm, like, definitely. I still think it's quite insulting.
Yeah, well, to a point. I think that Carlo Ancelotti definitely gave the players more freedom to work within the semblance of a structure. But even that, towards the end of last season, felt like teams who were just structured, you look at like an Arsenal, for example, who were obviously built with such a structure, just taking Madrid apart mm-hmm. in the Champions League and thinking, okay, is that the moment they were like, we probably need to change this a little bit? So they bring in a manager who not only has the gravitas and the nous in the changing room to potentially make a difference in Xabi Alonso, but also someone who's been very tactically smart in his time in the Bundesliga. And look, there will be people who are like, he's living off one great season. That's nonsense. Like, you look at the turnaround from where Leverkusen were. First 7 months didn't go great at Leverkusen for Xabi Alonso, but he found a system that worked and he implemented it. And when that changing room kind of rolled over and he got kind of full buy-in, it really, really worked for him. Right. So I think that you're coming to a point here where you are looking at a manager who is tactically smart and astute and wants to build a system and who has the gravitas to actually carry out the what you need to do as a Real Madrid manager, as an ambassador, but also, you know, to hold the
dressing room. Well, you need to be able to look Vinicius in the eye and say, actually, I know exactly where you're coming from.
Yeah,
it's basically the same thing that Zidane was able to do with Ronaldo successfully and actually got him to sit on the bench once and say, I actually do know what I'm talking about.
But if you look at if you then look at it from the perspective of, okay, like, you know, Xabi Alonso might, you know, the players don't like it for whatever reason. Like, and look, I'm not saying that's the fact. I'm saying that's what's being reported, right? But, you know, they don't like the structure. They don't like the system. They don't like us to work back in the same kind of way, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Fine. But if they've decided last year and the players, you know, had got to a point with Ancelotti, like, we didn't win anything. Mm. Like, we've come to Real Madrid to win stuff, like to be the biggest club in the world, to win the biggest trophies. That, you know, you come in then and Xabi Alonso steps in and goes, okay, I'll tell you what, we're going to have to catch up with the rest of football. Hansi Flick's Barcelona aren't perfect, but by hell, they play a system.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, it's very, very system-driven.
You only have to look over the road there at your greatest rivals to see what this kind of structure or tactical structure can actually do for you.
Mm. So the point being that if you bring in a Zidane for 7 months, so I still think, to be honest, is probably the most likely option if Xabi Alonso gets sacked, because he's going to be like, I want the France job in the summer, but I'll do you a 6 month deal.
I think it's
but
the
are you
only
just
option.
Back where you started when the next summer? And look, does Zidane's methodology, which to be honest takes quite a lot from Ancelotti in terms of giving them the freedom to do that, which didn't work last season, is it going to come up short in the same kind of way? And look, I'm not going to say here that Zidane can't do it, because we've seen him do it 3 times in a row, right? And win that and come from real depths to turn it around. But I do think it's interesting that if you are moving on from that and being like, actually, this isn't going to cut it in the era we are currently in football, why you would then talk about changing it or going back to that system, which didn't work for you last year.
Agreed. And it also means that you just wasted 6 months of everyone's time, because you went halfway into what was almost definitely a long-term project and then ducked out of it at the earliest possible point, which is a complete waste of time and money and planning, because getting Xabi Alonso on board is great, but knowing that he coaches discipline, and Alejandro Grimaldo, the left wing back for Bayer Leverkusen, he talked about Alonso in a lovely interview where he was basically just gushing about him, but he was like, look, he demands discipline, he brings discipline, but with a little bit of freedom. And that is Alonso. Like, he's not like telling all these players, like, he's not controlling them with a PlayStation controller. He's not removing all of their creative freedom. He's giving them a structure to work out of and then letting them work it from there. He was very good at that at Leverkusen, and that's what he's trying to do here. Just underpin it with some work rate and some structure. Is that really too much to ask? It can't be. And you can't bail on this kind of thing, because it's almost like the modern basics. So what does that say about the Real Madrid players? And where do you go next, as Jack alludes to, if you end up cutting the cord on this?
Well, exactly. And I think I don't think there's anyone that's watched football in around Europe over the last few years that doesn't think Xabi Alonso will be a success at the vast majority of his jobs. You know, not everyone's going to succeed at Real Madrid, and I think they'd be fools to cut it short. But this is a manager that feels like he's going to be around for the next 20 years and probably do a pretty good job at most clubs, given the way he started. You add a few key ingredients to this team. And remember, they've lost Kroos and Modric in back-to-back summers. That will take a little bit of adaptation. Fair play to Aurelien Tchouaméni, who has become the star, really, aside from Mbappe, in this side. He has had a phenomenal season to date. and you add a more controller, a controlling type of midfielder that's more of a difference maker from a Bellingham or Valverde, who are actually quite stylistically similar, maybe someone like an Angelo Stila. You keep Eder Militao for an entire season, if that's even possible. You get Trent Alexander-Arnold fit. And I just think Real Madrid do improve pretty exponentially. Mm-hmm. And at the moment, whilst they'll be disappointed to be behind Barcelona, I think what's really annoying them right now is Barcelona feel, particularly defensively, quite a bit weaker than last year.
Yep.
So to have ceded that advantage they had, to have ceded the advantage they have, well, it still exists, but that head-to-head win in the El Clasico as well, and now be behind them going into a really difficult period of the season where there is a break in La Liga, but then you go into the Super Cup and then the Champions League returns. And then are you playing two extra Champions League games potentially for Real Madrid as well? They'll just be so, so disappointed to have ceded such an advantage.
Yeah, they're still 4 points behind Barcelona, despite the fact that Barcelona are demonstrably worse than they were last season. And that might change for Barcelona over the second half of the season. Like, there's a bit of fitness issues on their end. As that clears up, as some answers at centre-back maybe. I don't know exactly how far it can go or how much it can change, but it might change. It does feel like they're squandering that opportunity right now. I can't disagree with that, but I don't think there is a really quick fix to this, because they have bought themselves into a 12 to 24 month culture change, tactical change, structure change. And if you bail on it now, there's nowhere else to go in a modern sense. And as Jack rightly points out, if you just keep running back to the same old, you're never going to actually install the change that you're looking to achieve in the first place. So it would ruin everything.
For sure.
And look, I've said it a few times. I think I said it a few months ago when we were talking about it and mentioned it today. But half of this first choice back line, which is Dean Huijsen and Alvaro Carreras, is very young and inexperienced. It just needs a bit more time, I'm afraid. And there's nothing you can do to make Dean Huijsen's magically 100 games more experienced. You can't fix that.
Especially when he's missing games and Carreras is suspended.
Yeah,
you know,
to keep going through, I'm afraid. And I know that Real Madrid, the mentality of a Galactico is ultimately, it's the quick fix, isn't it? It's the, well, if we spend £100 million on that guy, everything will be fixed. That is almost the philosophy of Real Madrid. It is the quick fix philosophy. That's how they think. And so they have become accustomed to demanding success immediately. There is no waiting at the Bernabeu. But unfortunately, I don't think they have a choice here. And I don't like any of the other options. And I'm sure they've looked at the market too and thought, I don't know, man.
Well, if you did want it, that my dream option for them, but I do.
Oh, Simone Inzaghi.
No. That was last year's shout. Well, I still don't think it would have been the worst call. But no, Jurgen Klopp would be, I think, for me. I've always imagined him coaching Real Madrid one day, but
me too.
I think he does feel like he's going to take over at Germany. Apparently, he's very much enjoying his role at Red Bull.
Have you actually both imagined him taking over Real Madrid?
Yes, yeah. I have.
I can't imagine a worse cultural fit,
really,
than Jurgen Klopp and Real Madrid. A man who has based his entire operation at both, well, at Mainz, at Borussia Dortmund and Liverpool, of the kind
Pressing.
Of like working class culture of the city, buy into the ordinary people, like to go into the club that literally prides itself on being like higher and
the
better
royalty,
than everybody else. Like that fit culturally doesn't work for me at all. Like,
doesn't need to.
It's no. I think you do a good job. I think you can do a good job pretty much anywhere.
I agree. That is very. I hadn't thought about that. It's very jarring.
I'd really, really struggle with the cultural ramifications of what that would stand for. Like in so many ways. Just like in terms of where we're at with Real Madrid, and like obviously the performances, even the performance against Alaves at the weekend wasn't great. And ultimately, when you have probably the best goalkeeper in the world and one of the two, let's say at the very least, best strikers in the world, both performing at a very, very, very high level, the chances are that things are going to be kind of like low-key okay most of the time.
Right.
But I was looking through these kind of results, and what you talked about at the top, like the losses and the draws. And you look at it, look, the loss away to Anfield isn't great because Liverpool weren't in great nick, but equally it's Anfield on a Champions League night. It's a bit like things can happen.
Yeah.
You lose narrowly to Man City in a game you play pretty well in. I don't think you can kind of look at that and be like, oh, be all and end all. I actually think that actually if you look at this run of results, the Elche game wasn't great because they were down to 10 men towards the end of it. But also, like, the way that it happened and Real Madrid having to come from two down wasn't all that much fun for them. So they played quite badly. But Elche have been really, really fun this season. And they gave Barcelona a very, very good game and probably should have beaten them as well. Rayo Vallecano to go to Vallecas. That's a place that I believe Real Madrid have drawn last two seasons. Barcelona drew their last season.
They hate
Atletico Madrid drew
that.
All the big guns hate Vallecas.
Yeah.
Like that's a result that happens every season, like it or not, right? Yeah. And so you actually look at it. The only ones I look at and go, that's bad, is the Girona one.
Girona, yeah.
Where they were dreadful. And Celta, where they completely and utterly imploded. And Celta were also brilliant.
Yeah.
And like played the best football they've played all season long.
They scored two of
the best goals you've seen this season. And look, Giraldez has done such a brilliant job with them. I actually look at that run of results and say, okay, yeah, you'd have really hoped to beat Girona because they've been god awful all season long. And I think you can be a bit frustrated that you didn't give Liverpool a better game and that actually you allowed Elche to go 2-0 up on you. But I actually look at the other ones. I look at that Vallecano draw and I'm like, shit happens every year.
Yeah.
And I look at the Man City game and I'm like, you know, it's Pep Guardiola in a bit of a pomp doing his thing. And I understand that hurts. I think the performances haven't been great. I don't think the results was bad as people are like potentially making out at all.
I think it's a story if Real Madrid have a bad half, you know. It's just the environment. Yeah. Like it's absolutely impossible.
Agreed. And look, I the results, maybe you're being a bit kind there, Jack, at points, but certainly going to Vallecas is really, really difficult and people don't necessarily understand how tough that is. I was listening to a Madrid podcast probably last month now, I guess. And they were actually just talking about the run of fixtures coming up. It was after the Valencia win and their run was Liverpool, Rayo, and then Elche and Champions League into Man City. And they were actually more scared of the Rayo game than the Liverpool game on the podcast. The three of them all agreed that was the scariest game on the fixture list. So it has been a little bit of a tough run, but like they shouldn't have been that close with Olympiacos. That was dicey as hell. Like, and that got to 3-2 into the second half. And I was like, oh my God, what is going on over there? And Girona's not good enough either. So look, things like results, they're not as bad as they perhaps look, but they can be an awful lot better. And it does need to turn around quite quickly, but there's no quick fix. And it sounds like we're all roughly in agreement here that this is a project worth continuing with and buying into. So if you are listening, Florentino Perez,
stick with our guy.
We have pointed our fingers and we have pointed them at
kind of injuries, really.
Discipline,
injuries, loss of form of a few players. What is one final thing from me is that their final two Champions League games look a little bit harder than they did when the draw was made. So they've got Monaco, who are now 5 unbeaten in the Champions League. They've drawn against City and Spurs. They've beaten Galatasaray. They've been pretty poor in the league this year, Monaco, but in the Champions League, they've actually been all right.
Legitimately weirdest team in Europe, by the way. Yeah, that's a whole different podcast.
Very silly, yeah.
And then Benfica's their final game, who, again, were useless in Europe for the first few weeks, but they've won their last two, including against Napoli. Mm. And Napoli were horrendous on that night as well, but Benfica kind of forced it as well. So
you know who manages them these days.
Well, exactly. And you can see the narrative, can't you? So those two Champions League games look a little bit harder than they did when the draw was made.
Yes, absolutely. And they don't want to drop into the playoff again because it was difficult last time and it will be difficult again because playoffs are horrible.
And Trent will have only just come back and they still won't have Eder Militao. It's just not needed.
Just not needed at all. Right, well, we're in agreement.
We're in agreement.
Doogie, thank you.
Thank you, Sam.
Jack, thank you.
Thank you, Sam.
And thank you for listening. We'll be back over the Christmas period with one more episode. We'll be looking ahead to the January transfer window, but for now, enjoy your holidays and we'll see you soon.